X10 shitstorm. Either way, it's bad news for someone.
Hey, listen, Ratko said, holding up his hands. Everyone knows there are problems at source level, but only Gideon can help you with the why.
I threw out a line. I hear he enjoys his privacy.
He doesn't have much choice, does he?
I laughed, trying to make it sound as convincing as possible, without understanding what I was laughing at. But the way the man with the goggles had said it, he obviously thought he had made a joke of some kind. No, I guess not. I changed the tone of my voice, now that he and I had established some shaky grounds for mutual respect. Well, let's put our relationship on a more friendly footing, shall we? You can put my doubts about the immediate quality of the product to rest by providing me with, how shall we say, a small commercial sample.
What's wrong? Ratko said, reaching into his coat and handing me a small dark red vial.
Got high on your own supply once too often? I took the vial, Zebra passing me her wedding gun. I knew I had to do it, that only fuel would enable me to unlock the final secrets of my past.
You know how it is, I said.
Sky and Norquinko pushed onwards, always keeping a wary eye on the inertial compasses. The shaft branched and twisted, but the head-up displays on their helmets always showed their positions relative to the shuttle, together with the route they had so far followed, so there was no real possibility of getting lost, even if they might encounter obstructions on the way out. The route they had taken led more or less to the middle of the ship, and now they were heading roughly forward, towards where the command sphere should be. They had been carrying on for perhaps 5 minutes when there was another bell-like reverberation, as if the entire hull had been struck like a gong. It seemed fractionally stronger this time.
That's it, Norquinko said. Now we're going back.
No, we're not. We lost the line already, and we already have to cut ourselves out. Now it just means we have some more to cut through. Reluctantly now, Norquinko followed him. But something was changing. Their suit sensors were beginning to pick up traces of nitrogen and oxygen instead of hard vacuum. It was as if air were slowly building up inside the shaft, as if the two clangs they had heard had been part of some immense alien airlock. There's light ahead, Sky said, when the air pressure had reached one atmosphere and begun climbing beyond it.
Light?
Sickly yellow light. I'm not imagining it. It's like it's coming from the walls themselves. He turned off his torchlight, ordering Norquinko to do likewise. For a moment they were in near darkness. Sky shivered, feeling again the old, never entirely vanquished terror of darkness which the nursery had instilled in him. But then his eyes began to adjust to the ambient illumination, and it was almost as if they still had the torches on. Better, in fact, for the pale yellow light reached far ahead of them, revealing the tract of the tunnel for tens of meters.
Sky, there's something else.
What? I suddenly feel like I'm crawling downhill. He wanted to laugh, wanted to put Norquinko down, but he felt it too. Something was definitely pressing his body against one side of the shaft. It was soft now, but as he crawled further, and now it really was a kind of crawling, it increased in strength until he felt almost as if he was back aboard the Santiago, with her spin-generated artificial gravity. But the alien ship had been neither spinning nor accelerating.
Gomez?
The answer, when it came, was incredibly faint.
Yes, where are you?
Deep. We're somewhere near the command sphere.
I don't think so, Sky.
That's what our inertial compasses say.
Then they must be wrong. Your radio emissions are coming from halfway down the spine.
For the second time he felt terror, but now it had nothing to do with